Today's shiur in Parshas Chayisara. Beginning of the Sedra, it says in the Torah, V'yavo Avram lispod l'sarah v'lif kosa. That Avram came to give a hesped to his wife Sarah, and he cried for her. So Yaakov asks, what can you possibly say? You know, Sari Meinu, the great Sari Meinu, there was no one as great as her in Nevuah, and she was Megayeres the Nashim, she took a chelik of Avraham Zachnasas Orchim, etc., etc. What are you going to possibly say about Sari Meinu? So he says, at the beginning of the Sidra, Rashi brings it down, that all her days, Koshnateha, all her years, Shavim Latova. So he points out, discusses here the idea of consistency, constancy and consistency, how a person has to be consistent, non-stop. And that was Sari Meinu, Koshnateh Shavim L'tova. All the years were equal for the good. She never stopped. She was who she was from day one right to the end of her days. Chaim Shmulevitz used to bring the following mashal. Says, you take a pot and you put it on the fire. And let's say, he says, for argument's sake, it would take 8 minutes to come to a boil. Because what happens is you put it on the fire, and after 5 minutes, you take it off for a few seconds, whatever, and then you put it back on again for another 5 minutes. And then you take it off again for a few minutes, and you put it on again for 5 minutes. You can do that the whole day long. It's never going to boil. Why? To boil has to be nonstop 8 minutes. Putting on a little bit, off a little, it's not going to do the trick. So too, when it comes to our Avodas Hashem, it has to be constant, to do a little bit, stop, and do it again, stop. It's not gonna do it. Brings another couple of examples of this. So Rabbi Akiva, what was his start? Says he was 40 years old, and he hadn't learned anything. And one day, he was standing by the a spring, and he saw a rock with a hole in it. And he noticed that, how did this rock get a hole in it? That the water was dripping down onto the rock. And they told him, "Amayim shenoflim aleh tadir b'chol yom." He says, the water is dripping on this rock, and it made a hole. So Rabbi Akiva said, he made a kal v'chomer. He said, if this water, which is soft, can carve into a hard rock, so Divrei Torah, which is strong as iron, all the more so we can make an impression on my soft heart. And he went back to learn Torah. So they point out what the people were telling him. It said, they told him, Noflim aleha tadir b'chol yom, that the water, that dripped a little here, a little drip, no, tadir b'chol yom. The reason why I was able to make an impression and carve out the rock was non-stop, day after day after day, the tadir b'chol yom, that's what did the trick. Similarly, famous for Rabbi Chaim Shmulevitz also said, Gemara in Ksubas, said that Rachel, the daughter of Kalba Savua, he was a very wealthy man, Yerushalayim, so she married Rabbi Akiva on the condition that he would go learn Torah. So the father was very upset that she married a simple shepherd, and etc. So the story goes that he went to learn, and he left the house, and he learned for 12 years. He hadn't come home for 12 years. After 12 years, he came back, and with 12,000 Talmidim. And he overheard this old man speaking to his wife, Rachel, and saying, you see what kind of a husband you have, left you, and so he overheard her say, if he would listen to me, I tell him to go back for another 12 years. So he said, I got the okay, got the authorization. He just turned around and went back. As we know, he came back and after another 12 years with 24,000 Talmidim. So the question is asked, says, Rabbi Akiva had left his wife for 12 years. He comes back, he overhears the neighbor talking to his wife and what she said, he can go for another 12 years. Okay, fine. So she was willing for him to leave for another 12 years. The question is asked, well, why didn't he at least knock on the door and say, hi dear, I haven't seen you in 12 years, Shalom Aleichem, whatever, have a cup of coffee and then go. She was willing to let him go, so why did he just turn around and go back for another 12 years without even saying hello to his wife? So he says the answer is, because when it comes to Ruchnias and other things, 12 and 12 isn't 24. That was 12 years, a break, another 12 years, so that doesn't do the trick. It has to be constant 24 years. I like to give the mashal, where we find a similar idea with the microwave. If you want to, you're putting a food into a microwave, let's say it needs to get hot, 2 minutes. So you put it in the microwave, you put it in for a minute, let's say, and then it stops, and you put it in for another minute. It doesn't get as hot as you put it in for 2 minutes straight. Mm-hmm. Why? It's 1 minute plus a minute. Minute is not 2 minutes. Same idea when it comes to learning. It has to be constant and consistent. A 12 and 12 is not 24 when it comes to learning. Finally, brings another mashal. We have a halacha when it comes to Hilcha Shabbos, that there is no bishel achar bishel. Well, somebody cooks something and it's already fully cooked, so there's no issur of re-cooking it. However, that's when it comes to a solid. When it comes to a liquid, the din is, as long as it's still warm, there's also no bishel achar bishel. As soon as it cools off completely, it's back to room temperature, and then is a problem of re-cooking it. So we use this as a nimshal, that we see it as long as it's a little bit warm, though, it doesn't cool off completely, it's okay. It's okay to keep cooking it, re-cooking it. So too, one has to remember, when it comes to times that are hard to learn, like Erev Shabbos, Erev Yom Tov, Bein Hazmanim, one has to remember, okay, you're cooling down a little bit, but keep the consistency. In other words, okay, just don't cool off completely. Don't get it back to room temperature. Keep it warm. And then bring it back up to the proper heat later. As long as you get at least a bit warm, the constancy and consistency is continuing. Next, it says that Avraham Avinu, can you imagine, he came back from the Akedah, and he found his dear wife Sarah had died. It reminds him of what happened. We lost a great woman a couple of years ago, Sukkot time. Chaim Kanievsky Shlita, he was davening mincha at Sukkot time, Tavshin Ayin Beis, in this Beit Knesset Letterman, where he davens, and his Rabbanit, Rabbanit Kanievsky, Aleha Shalom, she also davened, and afterwards she wasn't feeling well, so she went up to their house, and she asked for a Sefer Tillim. By the time they brought her a Sefer Tillim, they saw that she had left this world. So you can imagine, Chaim, the Badal Chaim Tovim, comes home and sees his wife, your wife who supported him all these years. And it's very, very hard. So he says, so too by Avraham here. It's Avraham Avinu, comes back from the glorious Akedah, came back to greet his wife, and she's no longer alive. How did she die? She just heard that there was going to be Akedah, and her neshama left her, as we mentioned last week. So he asks, What's the greatness of Avraham here? How could Avraham Avinu heard that, not only heard, he saw that his wife had died. How was he able to go on? So he says that was Avraham's greatness. His greatness was that he didn't live in the past. Avraham lives in the future. Okay, terrible thing. Sarah's gone, but okay, nothing you can do. You're not going to bring her back to life. You have to go on. You have to go on in life when things happen. Now you can cry, but it's no time to cry. You have to get going. Get up. Do something now. Continue. So that's what Avraham did. He lost his wife. He says, okay, terrible thing, but I got to prepare. I got a burial place for her. And he went and he organized Marasa Machpelah, etc. As it says in the Pasuk, V'yakam Avraham me'al penei meso, got up from the face of his dead. He had to continue. And Ma'isava Simon Labanim, we have to remember that what was, and you have to live in the future. As we said also last week, Al Tabit Me'acharecha, don't look so much in the past. Go on. Things happen, okay. Well, you have to continue to plow forwards. Kadima. So Avram went from here and found a shidduch for his son Yitzchak, and he himself remarried Keturah, as we are told. So that's the greatness of Avram, that looked in the future, and continued on. It wasn't broken. It brings a parish of a Mishnah from Lev Avram. The Mishnah is a Midrash, excuse me, Midrash in Tani Nivei Eliyahu, Rabbah, Lamed. The Pasuk in Tehillim, Al Naras Pavel. Al Naras Pavel, Sham Yashavnu, Gam Bachinu. There we settled, we sat, there we cried. V'zachreinu b'esion, remembering Eretz Yisrael. So he makes a diuk. It doesn't say Sham Yashavnu Ubachinu. There we sat and cried, but Sham Yashavnu Gam Bachinu, and we also cried. Meaning, here too we see he said that look, they looked into the future. Okay, we were exiled. We left Eretz Yisrael. We were exiled. We're here in bubble. But as the pasuk says, "Komar Hashem l'chol agol asher yiglesi miYushalayim beBavela." Whoever left Yerushalayim is in Bavel. Hashem said, "Benu batim v'shevu v'nitu kanot." You should build houses and plant trees v'ichlu et piryam and eat their fruit. In other words, first thing, Sham Yashavnu. We have to settle here. This is where we are. Okay, we got to make the best out of it. Kadima, onwards, go. And then, v'gam bachinu. Have to cry also about the Chorban, 100%. But first things first, further. Let's go on, go on. And gam, as a side point, we have to also cry as well. But we have to remember, that's the side point. The ikkar is not the crying. The ikkar is to go full speed ahead. So that's what... Perhaps the pshat in the pas in the chazal in brachas davav that kol mesameach chasan kilu bone achas mechorvo churvos Yerushalayim. Whoever is mesameach chasan, as if he builds one of the ruins of Yerushalayim. In other words, don't focus on the evil of the mourning of the past, but rather rebuild new bite. Build a new house for Israel, Bais Nem of Israel, new chasa, new kala, new house. That's what you have to focus on. So too, he concludes with every yid is building a Beis Hamikdash in his heart. Vasuli Mikdash v'shachanti besocham. And unfortunately, though, when we do averas, it's megaresh, it chases away the Shechina. That causes a churban abais in our hearts. And therefore, when we do tshuva, though, we have to remember, again, he says, tshuva is important, but kadima, onwards. So we see the Rambam says in Hilchos Tshuva, Meshaneh Shmo, Kolomar Ani Acher. Person has to change his name to saying as if I'm a new person, I'm a different person. I'm not the same person that did these maisim. Meshaneh Maisav, Kulam Latova L'derech Yishara. And then change everything he does for the good. Again, Kisham Yashavnu, as we saw in the Pasuk, that... Kadima, onwards, change my name, I'm a new person, starting fresh, okay, I sinned, it was terrible, was, but you got to start fresh. And then, after that, gam bachinu, you have to cry, 100%, you have to remember your veras, kipshaya ni edam, chatasi negdi tamid, the pasuk says, you have to remember it, but that should be the only thing, gam, the gam, it's the gam bachinu, also, but just aside, the main point is, go on with you, what happened, now straighten yourself out, go forwards. And gam bachinu afterwards. Next, it says in the pasuk, Vishkal Avram le'Efron, arba miyos shekel kesef, over la'socher. So, discussion in the Chazal already, what does it mean, over la'socher? And Avram weighed out for Efron when he was buying the Maras HaMechmelah for 100 shekel kesef, and it's over la'socher. What does that mean exactly? So, Yankalim would like to suggest the following. It says that Avraham, he said he'll pay for it. He wanted to pay for the Maras HaMechpelah because he wanted to be his with no questions asked. Because of Malay Nenali, he says, I'll pay full price for it. So what did Ephron answer? Lo Aduni, not like what you're saying. No, Shmeini, Asadeh Nasati Lach, V'amara Asher Bo Lecha Nesati Aleinei V'nei Ami Nesati Ala. Avram, I want to give it to you for free. You're a great person. It's my honor. Please, take the Maras HaMechpelah for free. But then he adds and says, Harba Miyot Shekel Kesev, Beinu Bein Chamahi. I say, you know, it's after all only 400 Shekel Kesev, which, by the way, in our terms would be like a million or two. But he said, you know, that's it. So what's the big deal anyways? You know, take it. It's only, 400 shekel kesef. And therefore take your dead and bury. So Avram was in a quandary. He didn't know what to do. Because on the one hand, he saw that the fact that Ephron mentioned this 400 shekel, that's really what he would like to take. But as we say, lo naim lo, it's uncomfortable for him to, take this money from Avram. So he's playing nice guy, as if, oh, no, here, take it. But really he would want the money. So now Avram didn't know what to do. Because if he would give him the money, he goes, here, no, take the money, then he would be shaming Ephron. As if, here, no, after Ephron said, please take it, and you're giving him money for it. On the other hand, he didn't want to take it for free, because he's afraid that if not today, tomorrow, Ephron's going to come along, go, no, I never sold it to you. And so he really wanted to pay for it. So he didn't know what to do. If he pays it, if you're no good, he's going to embarrass him. And if he doesn't pay him, so he wasn't sure what to do. So Avram, what did he do in the end? Over le socher. That he gave the money to a middleman, socher, a businessman. He gave the money to somebody else, who then arranged that Ephron should have it, and everything ended up akol ba'al mekomo b'shalom. So Ephron has his money, but he didn't have to get it directly from Avraham, which he would feel slighted. So he got the money through somebody else. Over, it passed through the socher, through the businessman. That's how he wants to teach it. And he says, where did he come up with such a pshat, says Rav Galinsky? From the following maisa. Very interesting story. Once in Brisk, there was a general called Gubernator, and one of the first things he did when he came to Brisk he wanted to close down the Talmud Torah of the city, and he says, that's it, in 30 days no more Talmud Torah. So he had all kinds of tainas why. He says, classrooms are very small, and yet they're filled with kids. There's no room, and Ken Yerbu and the Malamdim, the teachers they're lacking experience, and there's no place for them to play ball. It's Sar Balei Chaim, etc., etc., etc. Anyways, so what was the known thing to do whenever a type of gzera like this would come out? Shochad, right, give money, try to bribe your way out of it. So they sent some askanim. They came to the general with some money, but he said, what? He said, if you dare try to even suggest give me money, then that's it. I'm locking you up, and I'm just warning you now, it's 29 days where the Talmud Torah is going to get closed up. Finish. No bribes. Nothing. So, didn't know what to do. They went to the Rebbe, Rav Chaim Brisk, and they told him the story. They tried to bribe him. Didn't want to take any money. And now what? So, Rav Chaim asked them, how much money were you prepared to give for the bribe? Do you have, set aside? So they said, 1,000 rubles. So he goes, very good. He says, no problem. Just make a meeting with me and this general, and I'll take care of it. How? What? Why? Well, I didn't understand, but he said, I'll take care of it. Okay. Left it up to the Rebbe. So the next morning, 10 o'clock in the morning, they had an appointment, and it was a burning hot summer's day. Boiling hot. The Reinbrist comes to the general, knocks on the door. The general opens up, and he sees Reinbrist standing there in fully clothed for the most coldest winter's day. He's wearing his fur boots up to his knees, and his heavy fur coat, and his hat, his fur hat, and his thick gloves, and fully walks in a boiling hot summer's day. So the general says, Rebbe, is this the what the Rabbanim, your Rabbanim wear, that you have to wear? They go, no, he says, not at all. He says, Rabbanim would never walk around like this in a summer's day. People would laugh at them. He says, okay, so why are you walking around on a hot shot summer's day with these clothing, with this clothing on? So he said to the general, listen, I'll tell you a secret. He says, I have a grandmother, Aleha Shalom. She's in the, you know, next world. And, you know, every now and then she comes to me and she tells me certain things. So she just came to me last night. And she told me that today is going to be a very cold and rainy day. And therefore she warned me, you know, she wanted me to get sick. And therefore I should be prepared. So, okay, so I have to trust my grandmother. And she was a very honest person. She told me it's going to be a stormy day today. So that's it. That's why I'm dressed the way I am. And I got my umbrella with me, you know. And so the general like started like laughing, you know, a little bit to himself, a little bit out loud. And he says, look outside. There's not a cloud in the sky. And so he says, what can I tell you? Says Reb Chaim, as my grandmother said, and you know, she's pretty good. She doesn't say these things. So he says, but look, it's not going to rain. It's not going to rain today. What are you? Okay, what are you? So Reb Chaim said, listen, I trust my grandmother. I'll tell you what, he says. I will make you a bet. He says, if it rains, then you have to pay me just 10 rubles. If it doesn't rain, then I'll pay you 1,000 rubles. What do you say? So the general says, looks outside again to make sure, and he says, you got yourself a deal, no problem. He says, okay, until this evening, that's it. If it rains, you owe me 10 rubles. If not, I'll pay you 1,000 rubles. So he said, okay, it's a deal. So then after that, Rav Chaim said to him, okay, now that we've finished with that, I'd just like to tell you why I've come. So the general interrupts him and says, excuse me, if it's anything to do about the Talmud Torah, forget it. You're less 28 days, it's closing, nothing to talk about. So Chaim said, okay, you know, that is why I came, but you know, no is no, I tried, and that's that. So, goodbye. And he left. Next day, of course it didn't rain, so the next day, Rav Chaim goes back to the general, and general says, oh, what can I do for you today? So he says, I come to pay my debt. So he says, you see, your grandmother disappointed you, eh? So he says, it happens. What can I tell you? So, but you know, I didn't want to take a chance. I didn't want to get sick. She told me it was going to rain. So, but no, I see, right? And, you know, as you can see today, I'm dressed normally. And here's your money. So the general laughs and said, no, it's okay, Chalila. He said, I wasn't going to take your money. I was joking and making a bet with you. It's okay, whatever. So Rav Chaim said, no, not at all. Listen, what would have been if it would have rained? You know, I would have asked for my 10 rubles and you would have paid me the 10 rubles if it would have rained. So I have to pay you the 1,000 rubles because it didn't rain. So he said, okay. So he gave him the money, and he put it in his pocket, and that was that. So Rav Chaim has turned around to leave, and he says, just one thing, you know, just one request. If you'll make sure you leave the Talmud Torah open, okay? And he said, Shalom, and he left. So the general sat down, and as he's touching his pocket with all the bills, 1,000 rubles, he said, wow. He said, that rabbi really is a smart guy. Here he was left. Rav Chaim found a way of getting the bribe over to him without him realizing it. So, he said, what do we learn from here, says Rav Yankov? That the person has to know not only how much to give, but also how to give. That was the lesson of the story. And so, too, he says, that's where I came up with this shot with Avraham Avinu. They also want to get this money to Ephron, but how was he going to do it? So he thought of a way of getting to him. It's not only how much to give, but how to get it. He gave it through a third party, and Everything turned out for the good. Next, we find Avram sending Eliezer to find a sherech for Yitzchak. And Chazal tell us that Eliezer had himself a daughter, and he really, really wanted to have her marry Yitzchak. But Avram answered, "Ata arur ubni baruch, vein arur mit dabek v'baruch." He says, "My son is baruch, is blessed. You're cursed. You come from Canaan, so it doesn't go. It's not a good shidduch. Baruch and arur don't go together." So you can imagine Eliezer was somewhat put off, hurt, if you would say, about this, what Avram told him. And after all, he was called Zkan Beito. He was a Moshe B'chol Asher Lo. He was in charge of everything in Ruchnias. And he said Eliezer even looked like Avram, and he was Shalit B'Yitzro like him, controlled his Yitzro like Avram. He was a very great, great person. And the Gemara says in Yoma, he was Dola Umashkem Toras Rabo. He was his prime Talmud. And, but he said, "You're Arur, goodbye, forget about your dot." Pushed off. So he says, imagine that, the people of Haran, these were Ovdi Avodah Zarah, where Eliezer was going to, they were better than him. Okay, how could that be? Okay, but that's what Avram said. But what did Eliezer do after that? Now, what could he have done? Well, he could have gone to Haran. And when this girl, Rivka, comes along and gives him water, whatever, and he sees, she's, after all, 3 years old. Yitzchak's 40, 37 years different. This is not going to work. So he could have said, forget it, 40, it's a joke. And he could have just turned around, come home, and said, "Sorry, Avram, maybe you want to think another idea, but nothing's going to happen over there." But no. He put himself out of the picture. Avram said, no, he, as much as he wanted to be in the picture, he put himself out of the picture because he subjugated himself totally to his master, Avraham. He was called an Eved Neman. That's an Eved Neman. Eved Maskil. So, what did he do? In fact, we noticed that he put Rivka to a test. He said, and he said to Hashem, "If I ask for, I want a drink, could you give me a drink and a camel's drink, etc., etc." By doing so, what was he doing? He was taking himself out of the picture. He said, "Let Hashem decide. Here's a test. If it happens, it happens. That means it's meant to be. This is the right girl. If not, not." In other words, I'm not going to decide. I have my personal bias. I want my daughter to me. I was pushed off. Okay, then. But if I, have to judge, I have my bias, that's going to be hard. So he took himself out of the picture because he says, "I am an Eved to Avram. So I got to do whatever Avram wants, what's best," and never took himself out of the picture. So that's tremendous godliness. And in the end, Rivka was found, and Chazal tell us in the Bereishis Rabbah that after this, he was told that he had left being cursed, and he came into Baruch, because he was Sheret HaTzadik Be'emuna. Since he served the Tzadik Avram Be'emuna, he was taken out of being a Arur, and he became a Baruch. So he points out, because that is the essence of a real Eved Ne'eman, that he puts aside his own personal feelings, and everything is his master. Whatever his master wants, whatever, he's totally subjugated to his master. And that's what Hashem wants of us. We have to be His Eved. And we can't have our personal desires, what we want. It's not us. And it's about Kokulo Hashem. We are His master, slave. He is our master. Whatever He wants, we have nothing personal. Everything is totally subjugated to Hashem. It says, unfortunately, people aren't like that. Hashem wants it. If it fits in what I want, then it's fine. And not. They say a joke on the Chazal, on the Gemara Brachas, Yotes, it says, "Imarisa Talmi Chacham Shavara Vera Balayla, Al Tear Herachara Bayom, Vadai Asa Tshuva." If you see a Talmi Chacham that didn't aver at night, then don't question him in the daytime, because certainly he did tshuva. He was repentant. That's a simple pashup shah. They say it as a tongue-in-cheek. You can read it like this. If you see a Talmud Chacham that didn't have air at night, don't worry about it, because I'm sure by the next morning, vadai asa tshuva. Vadai wrote a tshuva. A shilas and tshuva is vadai wrote a tshuva of making okay the thing that he did wrong. That's not the way to go. Right? You have to put yourself out of the picture and subjugate yourself 100% to the will of Hashem. Also, he brings a famous mashal. There was once an officer. He was driving his horse, and he passed by this little shack in the village. And he noticed, though, that on the wall, outside wall, there were arrows stuck into the wall, and each one was exactly in the center of a bullseye. It was like a bullseye, you know, a target drawn, and there are a few of them, 5, 10, 15 targets, and each arrow was right in the bullseye. So he goes, wow, there must be some very talented archer who lives here, and I'm going to get him for my army. So he gets off his horse, and finds out who did it. So the woman who answered says, my son. He says, call your son over here. So he calls him out, and he says, you're the one that shot these arrows? He says, yeah. Why? He says, what do you mean, why? He says, how do you do it? Like, I've never seen such a thing. So the boy says, no problem, I'll tell you. First of all, I stand back, I shoot these arrows against the wall, and after they're in the wall, I take my marker, and I draw a bullseye around each arrow, a target around each arrow, and the bullseye in the middle. So that's the nimshal. But unfortunately, that's what some people do. You know, they make the halacha fit themselves, not that they should fit into the halacha. As they say, the joke that, you know, they have all these different things, hotlines or whatever, things you can... in Torah. So he said the latest thing is going to be that you put into your computer your shaila, and you put in the answer that you want, and then up on the screen comes the rabbi that says this and will give you that answer. That's obviously not the way to go. We have to be an Eved Neman and take ourselves out of the picture and subjugate ourselves totally to Hashem. Finally, he brings another well-known story, that there was once a wealthy merchant who used to travel far off in his business, and he took with him his Eved Kanani. He had an Eved Kanani that he would take with him to Mesharet him, to serve him. Anyways, once he was far off land with his Eved Kanani, and he got very sick. And he saw that this was going to be the end. So he called over his Eved and he says, listen, I'm dying, and you have been a very faithful servant of mine, and I'd like to leave you the Yerusha, you know, my whole estate, except it's not proper, you know. After all, I do have a son. One son who's, you know, back home, and I gotta leave him something. It's not right. I should leave him out. So I'll tell you what. I'll give you the whole Yerusha on the condition that you give him one thing. He has a right to request one thing from the estate and give him that. So when the Eved heard that, his eyes lit up. What? I get everything except for one thing. No problem. He says, my pleasure. Sure enough, the merchant died. And the Eved came back, and he inherited everything, and he developed all the things that he inherited, etc. So finally, he met up with the son, and he said, listen, I got to be honest with you. You know, your father did say that the condition was that I have to give you one thing. So the son heard is, what? One thing? I'm his son, his only son. He's giving me one thing. He gives us Eved Kanani everything. He said, "What kind of?" He says, "How could that be? What's going on over here?" So he was upset, and he went to a rav, and the rav said, don't worry, just I know what your father's plan was. Just listen to me. Just tell the Eved Kanani that you're fine with it. You'll choose one thing, except you just want to do it properly in front of a Beis Din. So he said, okay, fine. So he goes to the Eved Kanani, he goes, okay, I have one thing, but I would just ask if I want it done properly in a Beis Din with a contract, etc. So again, the Eved said, no problem, we'll go to Beis Din, no problem. Okay, so they get to the Beis Din, and the Dayan says, okay, you're allowed to have one thing. What would you like from the estate? So what did the son answer? What do I want? I'd like the Eved Kanani. An Eved Kanani, the din is, Masha Kana Eved Kana Rabbo. Whatever an Eved Kanani owns goes to the master. So therefore, by taking the Eved Kanani, he now gets the whole estate to himself. So this Rav that advised the son, that said, that was the greatness of your father. He was a very, very, very smart man. If he would have told the Eved, I'm giving everything to my son, the Eved would have gotten all upset, and he wouldn't have handed everything over, and he would have taken everything just for himself. And here, he thought he was getting everything, whatever, so he did everything proper, legally, he went to the basin because he thought he was going to get everything. And that was the way of acquiring. So that's the story, but the nimshal for our purposes over here is the same idea that we have to be an eved neman to Hashem. In other words, everything is Hashem. Our whole life is Hashem. Therefore, we have to this mashe kana eved kana rabo. We're just in the hands of the Kodesh Baruch. We should be zoicha that. By subjugating ourselves and being an Eved Neman, Hashem should free us from our slavery and our galus. We should see the coming of Mashiach Tzidkenu, Bimhira V'yameinu.